It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrich. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll talk about Native American and white communities joining together on environmental issues in Wisconsin and elsewhere. Our guest is the author of the new book, Unlikely Alliances. First, Senate Republican leadership says it has enough votes to pass the $1.5 trillion tax overhaul legislation. There is disagreement over who the tax plan would ultimately benefit or hurt in the long term. While there are still a lot of details to be worked out, it looks like the bill could have a huge impact on health care in the United States, with potential changes to the Affordable Care Act and possible cuts to Medicare. Julie Rovner joins us now. She's the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Julie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Before we get to health care, we're going to refer to the Senate tax overhaul plan. That only sort of exists, right? They're rewriting it as we speak.
That is correct. They are rewriting it. We've seen lists of potential amendments that will be changed. We just, in the last few minutes, saw a statement from Susan Collins, a Republican of Maine, one of the last holdout votes, about some of the changes that she managed to get into this bill in exchange for her agreement to vote for it. But, you know, it's important to remember that even if this bill passes the Senate, which now seems likely, although might not be till tomorrow, it still has to go to conference with the House. The House bill is very different. That could take a while. It could be difficult for them to come to an agreement on a single bill that both the House and Senate could pass.
So everything we say here is subject to change. But as you wrote in a piece that came out today, a lot of health care in this tax overhaul plan. Let's start with the individual mandate that is still, as I understand it, in the Senate plan to get rid of the Affordable Health Care Act individual mandate.
That's right. It's actually, because of the budget rules, they can't get rid of the mandate itself, but what they've done is they've reduced the potential fines to zero. So they've effectively gotten rid of the mandate by saying if you don't have health insurance, you won't have to pay any penalty, or the penalty you would have to pay is zero. There is a lot of concern in the health policy community about this and the impact that it could have on the individual market, people who buy their own insurance. Insurers, you know, that was their deal at the very beginning of creating the Affordable Care Act, that said, if you're going to make us take sick people, you're going to have to give us a way to get more healthy people into this pool. And the way to do that was to have this this fine for people who didn't have health insurance. Without the fine, there's a concern that healthy people will simply not buy insurance, and sick people will, because now they can, and that it's going to be prohibitively expensive for insurers. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that simply the repeal of this requirement would raise premiums by 10% per year, more than they would already go up, and 13 million fewer people would have insurance at the end of 10 years, some of them because they don't want to buy it and wouldn't have to pay a penalty, but some of them because they were simply priced out of coverage.
These issues you're talking about are part of why Republicans didn't end up passing a health care repeal law earlier this year. Why did this end up in the Senate tax overhaul package?
Well, frankly, because they needed the money. Repealing the requirement produces about $338 billion in savings. Some of that is from fines that people otherwise would have paid, but some of that also is from money that now the federal government won't have to pay to help people pay for their premiums, those premium subsidies. If people don't buy insurance, then the federal government won't have to help them buy it. That's where a lot of that savings comes from, and the Senate needed basically that money to pay for other things in the tax bill. Also, the individual mandate has by far been the most unpopular part of the Affordable Care Act, although, you know, if they were, you know, doing what sort of health policy analysts would suggest, they would have to repeal not just the individual mandate, but also the requirement for insurers to sell insurance to sick people.
We're talking to Julie Rovner from Kaiser Health News, looking at the Senate tax overhaul plan and what congressional action could do when it comes to health care. The individual mandate wasn't the only thing you drew attention to, Julie. There's also Medicare. I want to listen to Senator Marco Rubio talking to Politico reporters earlier this week about the deficit and how this could all affect Social Security and Medicare.
The driver of our debt is the structure of Social Security and Medicare for future beneficiaries. We still have time, not just to save those programs, but responsibly structure them in a way that doesn't impact current retirees or people about to retire, but in a way that would probably impact it for me and people younger than me in ways that, quite frankly, you wouldn't really notice and you wouldn't really object to.
As I understand it, Julie, this Senate tax plan doesn't say, hey, we're cutting Medicare, but the impact might be to cut Medicare down the road. Is that right?
That's exactly correct, and it wouldn't be that far down the road. It would be next year. There's a separate law called PAYGO that basically says that if Congress adds more to the deficit and doesn't pay for it, that other programs, other spending would have to be cut. Social Security and Medicaid are not part of that, but Medicare is, and basically it would require effectively a cut of about 4% to Medicare. I think it's about $25 billion a year over 10 years. That's something that would happen automatically unless Congress then voted to waive it. Susan Collins, in saying that, you know, she's going to vote for this bill, said that she's been assured by Senator McConnell and Speaker Ryan that they won't let these cuts take effect, but they don't have control over 60 votes in the Senate. They would need Democrats to do that. It's quite the risk here for Republicans who say they don't want to cut Medicare, but they are willing to add $1.5 trillion to the deficit.
There's a lot of deal making here going on, and at least the deal you just pointed out may not be enforceable. This might not be something they can back up down the road. Does that apply to a lot of these issues we're talking about?
It does. I mean, you know, we saw Senator Flake of Arizona said that he would vote for this bill because he's been promised that Congress will do something subsequently on the Dreamers, the children who were brought to this country illegally by their parents. It's not at all clear that will happen. There have been a number of sort of things that have been promised that the promisers can't necessarily follow up on.
A couple other issues you point toward: a repeal or a change to the medical expense deduction. What's happening?
That's right. This is in the House bill and not in the Senate bill, but the House bill would eliminate a number of popular deductions, and one of these is the medical expense deduction, which was changed in the Affordable Care Act. So really only if you have very, very high medical expenses, more than 10% of your adjusted gross income, you can take this deduction. So as a result, not that many people do. It's about 9 million people, but the people who do take it have extremely high expenses. It's mostly for long-term care expenses, for families with disabled children, or for people with chronic diseases who have very expensive treatments for those diseases. And the Republicans said, well, you know, we're going to double the standard deduction, so that will make up for it. But doubling the standard deduction isn't going to begin to make up for these people who are spending $60,000 and $70,000 and $80,000 a year on their health care.
Another change that may be on the way: taxes on tuition waivers for graduate students, which doesn't sound like a health issue right away, but I guess graduate students includes medical students.
That's right. Well, actually, the tuition waivers are mostly for science, people pursuing PhDs in science, and obviously PhDs in anything, but there's a concern about the research pipeline. The way it works now is if you go to a university as a graduate student, they waive the tuition, you get a small stipend for teaching, and you don't have to pay taxes on the tuition that you're not paying. This would say that you would have to pay taxes on the value of that tuition, even though you're not paying it. Now, the other thing that really would affect young doctors is the elimination of the deduction for student loan debt, because 75% of medical students who graduated in 2017 had student loan debt. Half of them owe nearly $200,000. Again, when they first graduate, they're not paid very much. So that would be a significant increase to the taxes that they would owe also.
And finally, a repeal of incentives for drug companies to treat rare diseases. Is that right?
That's right. This is the Orphan Drug Act that was passed in the 1980s that encouraged drug makers to develop and market drugs for rare diseases or for diseases that affect fewer than 200,000 people. And part of that is a tax credit. The House would eliminate that tax credit. The Senate would not eliminate it but scale it back. There's concern that the tax credit has been abused by some drug makers using it for drugs that are not necessarily orphan drugs. But at the same time, this credit has been used to bring drugs that serve only specialized drugs for specialized populations of people. So groups that represent people who have these rare diseases are very upset about getting rid of this drug credit.
Julie, as we said up front, these are all subject to change. But as we wrap up, are these health issues being kind of swept under the rug as part of this massive tax overhaul package?
Well, some of them are and some of them aren't. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion about the individual mandate and the potential impact of that on people who buy their own insurance. I think the people are starting to pay attention to some of the potential Medicare cuts. I think the rest of them, you know, there are so many things in this tax bill. It's a very big bill. And again, it does change, you know, from hour to hour. The anticipation at this point is the Senate will pass it and that it will go to conference with the House. And I think maybe more attention will be paid there.
Julie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Anytime.
Julie Rovner is the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News. She joined us today to talk about the Senate tax plan and what impact it could have on health care policy.